You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. We're still reeling from that terrible performance by England in Barbados. Mind you, they haven't got a great record in Barbados. They haven't got a great record in the West Indies, actually. I think their record over the last 10 years is played 8-1-1. So it's now played 9-1-1 since 2004, when, of course, they played well and actually won that series. Moved on to Antigua. Pitch will probably be a bit flatter there, but it's opened a few sores, that first defeat, which is going to take something more than sticking plaster, Simon, doesn't it?
Well, when England are bad, they are very, very bad, aren't they? They are capable of some horrendous performances. You think of New Zealand last year in Auckland, bowled out for 58, lost by an innings, thrashed by Pakistan at Lord's. I mean, they didn't play that well against India at Trent Bridge as well, but they came back. One of their sort of features of their cricket is they've been able to come back. They came back to beat Pakistan. OK, they didn't come back to beat New Zealand after Auckland, but they did play quite well in Christchurch, and they were pressing for victory on the final day, and they actually caught some catches they probably would have won in Christchurch. They won at Headingley after losing to Pakistan. They won the next Test match after they lost at Trent Bridge to India. So perhaps there is some hope, but that was an absolutely woeful performance from England. Having said that, West Indies played really well. I mean, it was a really accomplished, professional, disciplined performance. I mean, goodness me, they went a whole day without losing a wicket. That was, you know, that. What about the discipline involved in that? In just also being ruthless as well. Really, really putting their foot on England and just almost rubbing their noses in the dirt, really. That's what they did on that third day. I mean, to bat a whole day, or they didn't bat the whole day, but, you know, till the declaration came, without losing a wicket. After 18 wickets had fallen on the previous day. It was a fantastic effort.
Bizarre, actually, wasn't it? We have got some views about why England played so badly, and actually those views are shared by a famous character who we've got in part two, Clive Lloyd, of course, the famous West Indies captain who really unified that country in the 1970s and 80s and made them the world beaters that they're famous for. He's got some quite strong words to say about things like preparation, actually, which was a little bit lacking, I thought, from England's point of view. Two fairly nondescript early matches before the first test. Joss Butler, I think, only scored 3 runs in the two games. He didn't play in one of them. One or two of the other batsmen didn't really get much of a knock, Jennings, for instance. And that kind of lack of preparation showed through in the test match.
Listen, in the lead-up to that Test match and during that Test match, two England players, Jimmy Anderson and Moeen Ali, both referred to the preparation not being ideal. Now, you don't hear that very often, do you? You don't hear that. They might think it, but they don't say it. Alistair Cook, former England captain, in his column in the Sunday Times at the weekend, pointed to preparation. So, you know, you've got three players there, two who are, you know, England giants. Cook and Anderson, really experienced cricketers, and Moeen Ali's played an awful lot of international cricket now, all three of them saying the same thing. So, you know, preparation is involved in it. It's got to be, because you need a bit of intensity, surely. And people say, oh, well, in Sri Lanka, they didn't have that preparation. They had two-day games. And yet, quite a lot of them had been out there
already,
playing one-day international cricket. So, in a sense, quite a few in the team were battle-hardened. And, you know, you could say, well, you know, Ben Foulkes didn't have that. He was, you know, he about a week before the series, he wasn't even in the country. But, with Foulkes, I suppose, what can you say about that? Well, you might say he had so much to prove that he was... You know, there was a real determination to prove his worth to the side, which, can help players right at the start of their international careers.
There's a sort of beginner's luck element to it. And also, the opposition can't really prepare for somebody they haven't seen much of or don't know he's going to play. So there is a sense that, you know, whereas you can get ready for the other players that you know you're going to be against and really kind of get some good plans in place. England's most successful tour... of the last 15 years, well, even their most successful two tours, the win in India, where they had a bit of a warm-up before that under Alistair Cook, and then, of course, particularly the Strauss tour of 2010-11, where they played three...
Of Australia.
Yeah, where they played three warm-up matches, 2 3-day games and a 4-day game before the first test. And they scored in that 4-day game, they scored 520. Mm. So that was proper time in the middle. And that's clearly what they were lacking in that first test in Barbados.
Yeah, I had the sort of sense that... I mean, what decided the game was when England batted on that second morning afternoon, you know, either side of lunch, or in fact after the lunch interval. That decided the game. It was about an hour's cricket that settled the match, wasn't it? And it just had that feeling that England weren't quite on it, that they were just a bit lacking. And once that happened, the game was gone, wasn't it, really? And they, you know, they hinted at getting back in it when they had West Indies 60 for 5, but they were still 270 ahead. And yet, you know, you just felt that the die was cast. So, I mean, you can go back to the bowling aspect of it as well, you know, team selection. But, you know, preparation, in a way, is a perfect storm. I mean, preparation, selection, West Indies ready for them. I think they won a good toss as well, the West Indies.
And England have only won two of the 10 tests in which they've lost the toss recently. So they're not as good, clearly, when they lose the toss.
Yeah, and West Indies have got some very talented cricketers. Jason Holder is a fabulous cricketer.
Underrated, I think, generally. Although he was in, interestingly, the World ICC Test Team of the Year for 2018. He got in ahead of people like Ben Stokes.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't actually mean he's underrated. And that sounds a strange thing to say, because actually they do it on the stats. But it might be that, oh, well, you know, Jason Holder's in the side. Oh, he's not really that
good. What I meant by underrated is sort of perceived not to be a threatening cricketer.
Yeah.
But he's a bit cleverer than people give him credit for, I think. And the stats back it up.
Absolutely. And that was why he was in the in the Test Team of the Year. People say, well, why wasn't Jimmy Anderson in the Test Team of the Year? Well, if you look at the stats of the bowlers who were in it, they were even better than Jimmy Anderson's. Yeah. You know, he had a very good 2018, but three other bowlers had even fantastic 2018.
I've worked out, with the help, I admit, of Andy Zaltzman, actually, that bowlers are taking their wickets at a lower average in 2018 than in any year since 1959. Mm. They're taking their wickets at 27. So the bowlers are really on top, relatively speaking, in the last 12 months. Why would that be? I think there's a few reasons. I think it's... at the moment, there are several high-class seam bowlers of the calibre of Anderson. Vernon Philander's another. Mohammad Abbas of Pakistan is another. And then obviously people like Rabada, Jasprit Bumrah. There's a few around who have incredible control as much as they have skill. And they're able to apply a lot of the data, the stats that are coming out of Hawkeye to really be very forensic in the way that they bowl. The data about the batsmen now is much more precise, so they can really... they're almost like extensions and bowling machines. And plus, the advent of bowlers round the wicket to left-handers has really cut a left-hander's prominence as a batsman, because their angles are minimised and they're having trouble with that right arm round the wicket angle, which they have, you know, ever since bowlers have found that way of bowling to left-handers, it's become more and more popular and batsmen have had less and less answers to it. So there's a few reasons why batsmen are struggling more, but, you know, they've got to fight back, because these bowlers, some of these bowlers are very skilled. And you look at Kemar Roach, for instance, the way he bowled in that first Test match, to a lesser extent Jason Holder. They applied plans very precisely and England fell into them.
What about the 1990s? I mean, there were some fantastic bowlers around in the 1990s. You'd think that one of the sort of low-scoring years were in the 1990s. When you think of Donald and Pollock and Wasim and Wacker and Kirtley and Courtney and
they were
and
devastating.
McGrath.
They were devastating, but they, some of them, you know, the Wackers and the Donalds and people like that, conceded a few more runs. You look at the figures of the Vernon Philanders and the Abbasses and the Andersons, they leak one run and over, or one and a half runs and over. They just don't let the batsman get away. Mm. And so that's probably why those averages are so low.
Also as well, I mean, I think there must be a white ball factor in this as well, isn't there?
Yeah,
there just aren't the batsmen prepared to play in that old-fashioned Test match way.
Well, absolutely.
I would have thought, anyway, that would be my intuitive
answer. I think that brings another point across, which is something that England must think about subsequently, is that it was all very well getting bowled out for 77 in the first innings, which, I mean, was a poor batting performance and a very good bowling performance.
Yeah, very good bowling performance.
But it was the second innings, the way they just capitulated to non-turning off breaks, which was really poor, just not only from the technical point of view and just bad method, but also the thinking point of view, because it did rain on the fifth day, not all day, but you never know. Mm. They could have hung out for a draw, but also it's the cumulative effect you have on a bowling attack over a three test or a four test series. They're quite closely packed together, these matches. If you can keep a fielding side out there a bit longer into the fifth day, it has a gradually wearing effect, which was proved brilliantly by Che Pujara in that India-Australia series, where he just wore the Australian bowlers down over something like 30 hours at the crease, face over 1,000 deliveries, and by the end of the series, those faster bowlers were knackered.
Yeah. What about England's team selection? There's been a lot of comment on that. Stuart Broad not in. In retrospect, you know, after about a couple of days, it struck me that the best attack, or perhaps not even a couple of days, but the best England attack for that pitch was Anderson, Stokes, Broad, and Wokes. So those four right on pace balls. But of course, England have used that sort of attack abroad before, and it's not really worked. They've been a bit toothless. And it struck me, I was thinking about this, it struck me that the reason we saw that England attack is because Root, having seen samey attacks fail in the past, wants that variation. He's got Anderson the swinger, he's got Curran the left arm swinger, he's got Stokes the enforcer, he's got the leg spinner, he's got the off spinner. And he's got himself to bowl a little bit of something as well. He bowls a bit of leg spin, a bit of off spin as well. In other words, there's a lot of variation in that attack. But actually, can Curran play in a three-man pace attack when you think actually there is something there for the pace bowlers? What I mean by that, you know, if it's spinning like a top, then, you know, Curran can play.
Because he's just taking the shine off and maybe taking the odd wicket.
Yeah, and gets runs. But, you know, where you want the pace bowlers to really do a job, a long concerted job, can he really play in a three-man attack at the moment?
No. And what I think England need most of all, and in a way they haven't got the answers in the Caribbean, is pace. And it's the same story as in Australia a year ago, even actually a little bit in England when Bumrah came back into the India side. He gave India a cutting edge, which was emphatic in the victory at Trent Bridge, and then also in Australia where he gave the Indians this sharper edge. England do not have that. They haven't got somebody who can give the batsman hurry up. Look at the effect Shannon Gabriel had in that first Test match. He only took two wickets, but he really gave the England batsmen, people like Root, a bit of a fright. I think Stokes was a bit freaked out by him as well. He didn't latch on to a few of those fuller deliveries from Gabriel. He didn't get the wickets, but he got the wickets for other people. It reminded me a bit of the effect of somebody like Patrick Patterson. You know, big, strapping guy, very strong shoulders, aggressive, bowls those balls, which you don't pick up. And Graham Gooch said when he faced Patterson that he was the one time in, I think, Jamaica, where he actually feared for his life.
Yeah, 1986.
Yeah, and that has a real effect, a rather destabilising effect on the dressing room when you see one of your best players slightly, you know, flinching and flapping at balls because he's not really in control of them or picking them up. Root was doing that, and that you know, can have a sort of subliminal effect on a team. England haven't got anything to fight back with in that sense. they have got Mark Wood out there. I would be inclined, if he was fit, I'd be inclined to play him on these pitches because they need something, just something to give the batsman something different. It's all very well having your Wokes and your Anderson and Broad, who are all of a type. I want someone with a bit of pace that's going to bowl Yorkers and the old bouncer, and even if he only bowls a few overs, something a bit different, something to just give the batsman a bit of adrenaline, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it all depends on the surface that's produced for Antigua. It's under wraps. I saw a photograph of it today, and it's under cover. So, but generally speaking, there it's quite slow and low, isn't it? I mean, West Indian pitches are a bit more like that these days. So, England, you know, in theory, England have got a problem here. I mean, it is a very flat pitch in Antigua. You know, it might even be a draw. Who knows? There might be a bit of rain around as well. The odd shower here and there. You know, England are under pressure in this series. That's the problem. Is it 3-match series? You lose the first test, bang! You suddenly under pressure, series that you expect to win, you hope to win, your favourites for. What do England do with their team selection? Are you going for Wood? What about Ben Folkes' position in the side? I mean, you know, admirable series in Sri Lanka, absolutely fantastic, did really well. It seems a harsh thing to say, but in a way, his position in the side has caused England some problems, hasn't it? It's sort of unbalancing, in a strange way, destabilised the team because, which is not to criticise him at all. I mean, he just went out there and did what all that was required of him. But what it does, I mean, England had that balance where they could play four pace bowlers and two spinners, or they could even play three spinners and three pace bowlers if they thought it was going to spin squares. They've got all those options covered. Folkes' position in the side means they can't play that sort of attack. Well, I suppose they can play four and one, can't they? They can play four seamers and one spinner. But you know, you might need two spinners in Antigua. You might need Leach rather than Rashid. But of course, if you do that and Folkes plays, you can't play four pace bowlers. So do you understand what I'm saying? Last summer against India, they won 4-1, and that the formula they had was 4-2. And people criticised it. I mean, Michael Vaughan said, you know, six bowlers is too much for any captain. But what it does do is it gives you lots of different options.
I'm just more worried about the batting, really. And I think the difficulty that England have...
It's not an issue with the bowling at all. But what about the balance of the side?
They definitely needed another seamer in Barbados, and they need to correct that. I think Rashid is a luxury they don't need in these conditions. I'd rather have somebody with a bit more control.
So Leach for Rashid?
Yeah, certainly Leach for Rashid.
Or Broad for Rashid, or Wokes for Rashid,
It all depends on the pitch, but England need three proper seam bowlers in the West Indies, in my view, unless they're playing in Trinidad, which is more of a subcontinental type of pitch. But in Antigua, I think they definitely need three proper seamers. But they also need three proper batsmen as well. There's a thing about having all-rounders.
Hold on. They've got Jennings, they've got Burns, and they've got Root. Those are three.
I meant in the top three.
Right.
So, in other words, four then, with Root as well. I want three frontline batsmen, because I think if you have all-rounders, and Bairstow...
So you don't count Bairstow as a frontline batsman?
I was going to say, he still is an all-rounder in the sense that he is a keeper as well as a batsman. I know he's now in the side as a batsman primarily, but still people are now considering whether he should play as the keeper, take the gloves back. I think that mentally, he's still probably in that field of batting and keeping. What I mean is that a batsman who's a batsman only, that's very much their role in the team. In their mind, that is their role. And therefore, they can apply themselves purely to batting. I think Bairstow is still compromised. And certainly the likes of Stokes, the likes of Folkes, obviously, as a keeper as well, Moeen Ali, you know, they're all-rounders. So they have to sort of spread the load a bit when they're preparing for a game. Batsmen know what their role is, and that's specifically what they practice. That's what they focus on. And that's their job. And I think England need more specialists at the top of the order.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good luck with finding
them. Where do they find them? Well, I mean, they've got Denley there, haven't they?
Yeah.
I know it's you'd say, well, what, you bring in another debutant? They've kind of made a bit of a rob for their own back with all these all-rounders and with three wicket-keepers sort of occupying batting spaces.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is where sort of Folkes comes into it, or doesn't, if you sort of mean. You might say, actually, do England really want that?
England need more batsmen who are going to sell their wickets dearly, like Pujara did for India. Jennings tried it. He can't do it without having a little swish of a drive after every 20 minutes or so. If he can possibly put that drive away, lock it away and never get it out again until he's on 70 or 80, then he might have a chance. But for me, he is too vulnerable outside off stump. Burns, I thought, did pretty well. They've obviously got Root, who hasn't yet really shown his colours in the Test series. I think they need another batsman who is going to sell their wicket really dearly.
So, I mean, Stokes tries to sell his wicket dearly, doesn't he? Yeah. But is it ideal?
Well, he's got from one, sort of almost gone from one extreme to the other. He's become almost a bit strokeless, hasn't he? Or Stokeless.
Yeah, well, that's why I think he was really suited to bat at six rather than five, especially if he's going to bowl 50 overs. Mm. I mean, do you really want your number five to bowl 50 overs in the match? Not really, do you? Well, if he's a spinner, possibly, but not if he's a fast bowler. I know he's got himself super fit and he's really worked on his fitness enormously this winter. There's sort of like a sort of manic quality to his fitness training.
This whole discussion is going to be completely redundant when England win the toss and rack up about 500 and everyone's going to go, what the hell were you talking about? So I think we're going to take a break now because I think we want to hear from Clive Lloyd because he's got some strong views. OK, welcome back. We've done a good sort of demolition job on England and they'll probably perform incredibly well.
Well, as I made the point that, you know, they have very bad performances and often they play...
Bounce back
and do very well. It didn't happen in Australia last year, but there has been a record of it happening of late.
But anyway, the former West Indies captain, Clive Lloyd, a very strong character who's done a lot in the game, never mind bludgeoning the ball all over the place with the bat, and he used to have six grips on his bat, so nobody else could actually get hold of his bat at all. It was a railway sleeper, but no one else could get their hands around the bat handle. But of course, he was captain of the West Indies, very much unified a disparate nation, brought all those players together, very calming influence. And after that, became the team manager for a while. So he's seen both ends of West Indies, from their great success to their but horrible decline.
And he's also been an ICC match referee as well. He was actually at the semi-final in 1996 of the World Cup that he effectively sort of called off. You know, when there was a riot in the stands and things were being thrown on and Sri Lanka were awarded the match. He's been a match referee. So he's seen the game from all sorts of angles. So he's seen it from an ICC angle and he's seen it from a player angle and a management angle.
And he's got strong views about the importance of preparation or lack of it before Test series.
I think it's terrible because you obviously we'll take this guy or these two guys on tour to groom them for the future. You can't do that anymore. You don't have enough games for them to get a chance to get acclimatized to conditions. So I'm saying to the ICC, if we want to improve Test cricket, we have to play more of these games because everything now is finishing in 3 days and 4 days. And that is because of some of the players ill-prepared. You're picking a team from the guys you see in the nets. Well, I never thought that was the best way of choosing or selecting a player. The youngster now doesn't have a chance of playing a game to prove himself. Or if you have somebody who's out of form, they will not get a chance to play in a four-day game to improve their form.
So whose responsibility is this, do you think? Is it the individual boards or is it the ICC to make sure that Test match teams are properly prepared?
I think it's the ICC because you want to promote cricket. You're promoting cricket and you want to promote Test cricket. This is not the best way of promoting Test cricket. Every game now is finishing on the third and fourth day. And you know why that is so? That is because of the DRS system. Now people can analyze the situation much more. Where you have gotten away with six decisions, now you can because you have this system. So the point is people must be well prepared for these eventualities.
So the point that Clive Lloyd has made, or several points he's made, one of them I think is very important in that, in a way, it's selling the public short by these teams not preparing properly for Test series, because often the first test of a series is a one-sided affair. It's happened quite regularly in the last 3 or 4 years because visiting teams are just not ready for the Test match and they lose and then they have to fight back. So that first Test match is often very one-sided in favour of the home team. And that's just not right, is it? I mean, you know, as I said earlier, that England's best performance in an overseas series, that 2010-11 when they won in Australia, they had three proper warm-up games. And something needs to be done about that, because there are too many one-sided starts to a series.
Yeah, Pakistan prepared really well for the Test series in England at the start of last
they
summer.
Did. They won it. They won the first.
Test. I mean, well, you could argue they did already have a Test match in Ireland, but they prepared for that game as well by having county fixtures, which they played properly as well. They were proper 4-day matches. You know, 11 a side, both teams going at it. So you know, there is some benefit in it, and with the Test Championship coming up, I think the West Indies, they offered England a full first-class match. I mean, they could put in Lord, inverted commas, or, you know, in the playing regulations, that every team has to play a proper 4-day warm-up match before a Test Championship match. I mean, there might be some kicking and screaming and saying, well, we haven't got time, we've got to play T20 leagues, we've got to play one-day internationals or T20s, whatever. But if you, as Clive was saying, if you're going to promote Test match cricket, make it work, and the Test Championship was a way of doing that, I think. It was like a starting point, it's all line in the sand. Then why not put that in? So you've got to play that guaranteed at least one first class match. I mean, you might want to play more than that, but you know, that actually guaranteed proper game.
And actually, he makes a point about young players. There's an opportunity for young players from the home side to show their ability a warm-up game should be against the A team of the home country. Mm. So when England tour Australia, they'd play Australia A before they play Australia. And that way, the Australia A players can get in a bit of form and notoriety, awareness from the selectors playing at a higher level than their state games as well, because there isn't enough of a bridge between domestic sport and international sport generally in the Test format. There is in the one-day format, because, of course, there's all these T20 leagues, which are a kind of bridge between domestic and international, and the intensity of those leagues does get players better ready for international one-day cricket. But for Test cricket, there's a few Lions tours, but they're played in front of nobody, often with, you know, injured players sort of trying to come back from injury, or players on trial or whatever. So that's not really a proper gauge of their ability at international level. Whereas I think playing in an A team against the tourists before a Test series would be a very good challenge.
And it's obvious as well, by implication, I mean, England do not take a tour of the Caribbean as seriously as they take a tour of Australia, because when they go to Australia, they do play three warm-up matches. They go to West Indies, they play two-days. So there you are, you know, QED. I mean, it's clear, isn't it, that that's the case. I thought another interesting thing that Clive Lloyd said as well, I hadn't thought about this, is that DRS means you have to prepare better as well, because your technique has to be tighter, because you get found out by DRS in a way that in the past you didn't, because umpires, if you hit on the front pad or whatever, they're not out. But now, because of DRS, you know, umpires are more willing to give batsmen out, and of course poor decisions can be overturned both ways. Interesting idea. I mean, I don't know whether it's absolutely, I don't know whether it's necessarily true, but it's worth. I hadn't thought of that as an angle on DRS and preparation.
It's not easy to prepare for DRS in a way. You're right. Get your technique absolutely watertight, and that way LBWs are less likely to happen. But actually simulating DRS in a practice game isn't easy, because you obviously haven't got the technology, you haven't got the cameras and Hawkeye and everything there.
And the other point at the end, the point about, you know, what does this mean for West Indies Test match cricket? Well, coming into this series, they'd lost four matches in a row away from home, and actually beaten really heavily in the subcontinent by India and Bangladesh. And most teams, though, of course, are stronger at home. But, I mean, their home record is not, I mean, it's not sensational of late, but they do seem to be a thorn in England's side, certainly at home. And, of course, you know, we all think back to that Headingley Test match where England fought back well, but they declared and lost the game. I mean, you could argue if England didn't declare, they probably wouldn't have lost. You know, they had more petrol in the tank. They could have got a huge lead and made it impossible for the West Indies to win the match, but they didn't. They thought they had enough runs on the board to declare. But that was a brilliant effort from the West Indies. West Indies do seem to provide England with a problem.
And I think their bowling attack in these conditions is potentially better than England's as well. I really like Gabriel. I think he's got this power and this extra sort of speed. He's a little bit fitter than he was, and clearly they've all got fitter in the last 6 or 7 months through Jimmy Andams, the director of cricket's insistence, realising that they were bad. And when we were out in the Caribbean 2 years ago for the One Day series, I think that was a genuine observation that they just weren't fit enough.
Yeah.
And now they've addressed that. And Kingmar Roach has really started to find his game as a test bowler. Both he and Holder have taken their wickets at under 20, I think, in 2018. Certainly Holder took his wickets at 12 in 2018. And everyone's saying, well, why is a guy of 6'6" and huge physique, why can't he bowl quicker? He doesn't need to bowl in cricket. If he can bowl that consistent line and length, he's hard to drive. He's managed to add a simple, quite subtle ingredient to his game, which is the outswing followed by the wobble seam delivery, which looks like an outswinger and goes straight. And he got 2 wickets with that, sort of borrowing from Anderson's sophistication as a seam bowler. So he's got 1 or 2 little tricks. I haven't seen enough of the spinner to be sure, you know, how good he is, but those 3 seamers, plus Alzarri Joseph as well, that's a better attack than England have got in these conditions.
Yeah, Holder's not a bad all-rounder either, I noticed during that test match.
Quite.
Double 100 at number 8. That's not bad at all. Now, last week on the podcast, we gave our predictions for the series.
Yeah.
And I suppose in the West Indies column, we're right. It's won already, because we thought England would win the series 2-1. I was working with Graham Munnings on the Cricket Social on BBC, actually, and he said there was a sort of suggestion that West Indies would win a test match, or it might be 1-1 or 2-1. And he said, well, where are West Indies going to win a test match? It was on the first day. How are they going to win a test match? Well, I think, well, we all know now how they're going to win a test match. So perhaps a toss is going to be important in Antigua. Do you see England coming back and winning 2-1? Do you stand by your prediction or not?
No, I don't. I think it's either going to be 2-1 to the West Indies or 1-1. I can see England winning a game, but I can't see them winning 2 games.
Wow. Okay, there we go.
What do you think?
I don't know. Each game is so different, isn't it? You can be thrashed 1 week and come back and win heavily the next. And that has been the pattern from England. I suppose the pitch has been crucial in Antigua. If it's slow and low, really flat, then I could see this game being a draw. I could definitely see the game being a draw, and then England would have to try to turn it around in St Lucia. So I think, yeah, big question marks over 2-1 now, obviously, even though the West Indies have got the one.
Well, talking of adversity and the difficulties of coming back from a problem, we've got an interesting interview next week with a guy who was in the Royal Navy and he was in Iraq, and he got very badly injured and had to be discharged from the Navy. And he's created a very interesting cricket-related second career. So we'll talk to you about that next week.
When I think we'll probably also talk about the second test match as well. Who knows what's in store for us in Antigua in the next 5 days or so.
Don't forget, by the way, please send us reviews on iTunes. And any questions you've got or observations that you have from this podcast, you can post them either on Twitter or at theanalystpodcast@gmail.com, the email address. We want to hear from you. We want to talk about any ideas that you have, any thoughts that you have on the game.
Yeah, I'm sure there's quite strong opinions on England's performance in the West Indies. So do get in touch, please do. And we'll consider some of them, read some of them out next week. Goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.